If we sound different, we are all three or four drinks in tonight, so that might make the show more interesting or not. We don't know. We're just coming back from the Eiffel Tower where we had a little party at the Eiffel Tower earlier on. Full disclosure, we came on that trip with from our friends from Kymco, manufacturer of scooters, and now they're getting into electric scooters, so they wanted us to check them out, and they were kind enough to bring us here, so that was fun. That enabled us to check out everything at the Paris Motor Show. But as we said earlier, we're going to still start out with our Tesla stuff. And starting this week with, of course, the biggest story, which was the production numbers and delivery numbers, production and deliveries. Because if you have been following Electrek in the past few weeks, we have already released all the production numbers for the third quarter. We did that on Monday for the final numbers, the 80,000 vehicles in Q3, total vehicles, and that included, of course, about 53,000 Model 3s. Tesla confirmed our own numbers the next day. And they added on top of that the confirmation for the deliveries with 83,500 deliveries, including 55,840 Model 3s, which, of course, is a new record. And they're likely to beat that again this quarter. I mean, there's not that much to say about it other than it's
good guess. that seemed like a good number.
Yeah. Oh, introduce your guest. Yeah, sorry. So we introduced Micah earlier, but when the audio was bad, so you guys probably didn't understand. But if you've been following Electrek for a while, you know Micah already from his coverage of electric bicycle and personal EVs like scooters, electric lawnmowers or whatnot. But it's the first time that he's on the podcast because he's going to talk to you later on about what he saw at the Paris Motor Show, because there were a ton of e-bikes there, a ton of electric scooters. And also, the audio is still bad. I'm sorry, the audio is still bad. It's the best we can do right now.
He says you sound toasted.
Oh, I sound toasted. I'm not that bad. I'm like three or four drinks in. I'm still good. And I'm on water for the end of the show, so it's going to get better. Don't worry about it. I thought you meant that the audio sounded toasted. Anyway, going back to the Model 3 production numbers and delivery numbers. Well, what else is there to say than it was an awesome quarter for Tesla? The main thing that I didn't like about it is like they still rely a lot on the huge end of the quarter push. And I cannot see a way where that big end of the quarter push is not like being a big strain on the customer service and the overall satisfaction of customers. Still hearing some very bad stories about like customers showing up at their supposed delivery date, and there's no vehicle there. Their vehicle has been already sent to someone else because Tesla is just trying to get them out as soon as possible. I get what you're doing. They're really trying to push hard as they can to be profitable in order to show the short that they're wrong and whatnot. But that's in the detriment to the customers, I think. So in the long term, Tesla should really think to end that practice of having to push all the deliveries at the end of the quarter.
Yeah, and the it's not like they're going to start delivering fewer cars. They need to really ramp up the amount of people who are delivering cars or a new type of delivery system. And they've been kind of playing around with that idea.
Yeah, they had a soon system. In the past few weeks, also Musk seemed to be really pushing that idea to direct customer delivery. So that might be a solution. But for now, it didn't have a big impact enough, I think, during the last quarter. But the good news is that it did produce some result in terms of numbers. Crazy impressive. Also, what was most satisfying to us is like now we know for sure that we have a good idea of the production process of Tesla, and because there were some doubts about them be able to maintain that number at 5,000 a week, and now we have a clearer view within Tesla's production process being able to maintain that number, which they weren't able to do it until reaching the very last week of September, where they hit again that 5,000 a week. Even more than that, 5,300 a week. Matt Obedia in the comment brought out a good point. We're able to maintain that this week. We weren't able to confirm the numbers this week. We're going to try to get back to you next week about that. But I kind of doubt it. And that'd be okay, too. I mean, Tesla has been pushing their employees pretty hard over the past few weeks. If they can get a break this week and not try to just break everything again just to get that $5,000 a week, that's fine with me. Moving on, well, with the increase of Model 3 production and deliveries, it's having quite an impact, especially in the U.S. since most of the deliveries are going to the U.S. still, some in Canada, of course. But it's making a big pressure on the mid-sized luxury market, which has been for a long time dominated by BMW. And now for the first time, BMW has admitted that Tesla's Model 3 is putting a lot of pressure on them. The CEO of BMW America made that comment to Bloomberg earlier this week, saying that Tesla is now ramping up their volumes and it's putting pressure on that market segment, which is, of course, extremely valuable to them with the BMW 3 Series and cars, all the cars around that segment. Though they were still up last month, but that was just last month, and they were like very slightly up. And I don't think that was just for the BMW 3 Series too. Of course, we learned also last quarter that the BMW 3 Series is actually one of the top trade-in for the Model 3, which is also interesting, I think.
Yeah, and part of that Bloomberg report noted that BMW over the last quarter was actually up versus Mercedes, I think Audi.
Those were down.
Yeah, so they're down significantly.
Yeah.
So it's not just BMW, probably even more so Mercedes and Audi are feeling it.
Yeah. There's just, I'm going to talk about the Navigate on Autopilot, and I think there's a question about it. Do you think that the Nav on Autopilot automatic lane change, no blinker, will be the first full self-driving features? You did not comment on that theory. What I did say about that is I think the Nav on Autopilot is closer to the on-ramp, off-ramp feature of the Enhanced Autopilot package, which is separate from the fully self-driving capability package. I don't think we can call it a self-driving feature.
So what would you call this? Autonomy 2.5 or 2.3?
I mean, if you go by the, all the autonomous level standard, you can still call it a level 2 as long as if the driver is still forced to touch the wheel the whole time and be vigilant and be ready to take control.
Right.
It's still a level 2 system, in my opinion. So the reference to that Navigate on Autopilot thing is that earlier today, Elon Musk confirmed that they are finally rolling out that version 9 update that we've been waiting for a long time. But he's doing it by holding the Navigate on Autopilot feature, which is arguably the biggest feature to be released with version 9. And he said that it's coming now in a few weeks. So apparently, from what we know, like, until this morning, only 2,700 cars had version 9, and those included mainly like development cars and, of course, the early access program. And now Tesla has apparently started rolling out the wider release to whoever, whole owners, basically. But as we know, that can still take like days and even weeks for some.
Yeah, we noticed actually if you head to a Tesla dealer and connect to their Wi-Fi, oftentimes you'll get software a lot earlier than you would just normally driving around. I don't know if that's the case still or with this version 9, but in the past that has. So if you're very adamant about getting it soon, you might want to just roll by your Tesla dealer, connect to the Wi-Fi, and check for updates.
You can try that. Like you said, we haven't seen evidence of that like lately, but at one point it was certainly a way to get it faster for sure. So what you're going to get with that update now, it's all the new user interface, a few new features like the dash cam features that we reported on last week. Now he said that the Navigate on Autopilot is not coming right now, but I don't know if that means that there could still some difference. Like we know that the Autopilot UI has been updated. Now the Autopilot 2.0 sees trucks. It sees motorbikes too. Didn't see motorbike before, right? Didn't see motorbike before. So you get those renders now on the UI of the instrument cluster, which you didn't before with Autopilot 2.2 and up. I'm not sure if that means it's going to be there if Navigate on Autopilot is not. I feel like it should be. It's not like a very safety related feature of the car, because the way it sounds, the Navigate on Autopilot, why they are pulling it right now is because it's not safe, maybe. And we did report that the very first updates that leak with V9, those updates were obtained by people that had root access on their vehicle, and apparently one of the early development V9 started making the rounds within the root community of Tesla owners.
Which is how big would you estimate?
I think it was like something like 20 cars that got. It might be much bigger than that. That people that rooted the cars, mm-hmm. but people that had root access and V9. My understanding is about like 20 cars or so. That's why we got so many leaks about the V9 in the past few weeks. And one of the early version of it, as we reported, was you didn't need to pull on the turn signal stalk to initiate a lane change that was suggested by Navigate Autopilot. It would do it by itself, which, like the commenter said, is much closer to a self-driving feature. Then that was pulled in a later on feature that was later on update of V9 that was pushed to the early access program. So, I mean, does that mean it's not going to be in a wide release in a few weeks? We don't know. Maybe that's why they were pulling it for a few weeks. They want it to be there, but they're not ready for it to be there. I don't know. I don't know for sure. My guess is no, though.
And also, the Model 3 hasn't been rooted yet, so no Model 3's got the version 9 from that particular leak, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, though. Like, maybe one person did, which is not... We're not aware of a clear way to root the Model 3 yet to hack it, but maybe someone has, and we just don't know, because there were a few leaks of V9 on Model 3 before. They were on cars that didn't have autopilot, though, so that limited what we could see about the update itself. But yeah, that's about it for V9 this week. We're going to, once we get back, like we have a bunch of Tesla owners among the team here, but we no one is near their car right now, so no one has V9 yet, so we cannot report in details about it. But as soon as we get back stateside, we're gonna do that. Another update that happened this week was with the referral program that happened last night, actually.
So maybe we will have early access going forward.
Yeah, that's something that actually came out of the referral program. What they updated is only the prices for owners that refer a new Model S, Model X, and Model 3 cells. The incentive to use a referral code hasn't changed. It's still $100 of free supercharging credits, which is a big downgrade, of course, from the lifetime unlimited free supercharging. So that's a bummer, but I mean, it's $100, so you might as well just use the code when you buy a car.
Right, and Elon Musk said that the current unlimited free supercharging isn't sustainable.
Like, isn't that sustainable? It's not coming back, too. So, I mean, if that's now like the best incentive that you get for using a referral program, I mean, that's fine, I guess, but I feel like maybe they should update that in the other rounds of the program at some point. What changed at this round of the program, which runs from where, like I think from today to December, two prices changed. The first one, which is probably the most interesting one, Tesla is going to allow you, if you get one qualifying referral, you can get any picture you want. They're going to etch it to a piece of glass and they're going to launch it into a deep space orbit, which I assume is a collaboration with SpaceX. I think that's a safe assumption to make. I mean, that's a really cool thing. I mean, it's a...
Why glass, though? Isn't glass heavy?
It lasts forever.
Yeah, that's the main point, I think, yeah. But it is heavy, you know. I mean,
it's very thin.
And I mean, just one qualifying referral too, right. So they're going to be like thousands of them.
Yeah.
So with thousands of them, that's going to be quite a payload for...
Maybe they figured out like a 3D way to do pictures on glass and they can just...
Yeah, maybe it's got like a piece of glass like this size, right. Or something. There was a big dummy payload on the first Falcon Heavy launch. Right. I mean, so maybe that's going to be like the next dummy payload. And if it blows up, then it's not going to be deep space. But it's still a cool thing, I think. Like, I mean, I like those kind of referral with Tesla did those. Like, they're just a very unique one that nobody else can make. I mean, if BMW wants to boost their sales of the BMW series with referrals, they're not going to be able to do that unless they buy like a multi-million dollar rocket from SpaceX.
Maybe they get Bezos
good point. The other one, which is a bit more interesting in terms of, at least for us, as we report on that, Tesla's software updates, and a bit more controversial too, in my opinion, they're going to give priority access to vehicle software update. Tesla says, be the first to experience the latest Tesla software update with priority access to selected release. Why I say it's controversial is because, in my opinion, the Tesla software update is a huge part of the Tesla owner experience. And giving priority to, for things like that to people just because they can sell cars more than others, I don't think that's right.
Also, it's kind of a beta test. Like, they don't roll it out all at once because they do a little bit at a time to see if it, like, breaks anything seriously.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the off chance that something breaks, it's going to be the winners who, you know, who have the brick car, theoretically.
Yeah. Though, I think there's a differentiation between that and the early access program, like the, right. the true beta testers. I don't think that's an invitation. You don't get four qualifying referrals and get into the early access program. I don't think that's what it is, because the early access program also includes things like giving feedback on the software, like it's right. it's a beta software, so you give feedback and everything. I don't think that's what it is. I think it might be like after the early access program, then we know that the rollout can take weeks at times, so it sounds like you're going to be in those early days of a regular rollout instead of a late one. And we know that some people get like two or three updates behind the latest update. So
yeah.
It would assure you that you're not there. But I see that like at Tesla taking a problem that they have with the rollout of the software and making it a feature of giving it to owners. I would prefer them to like fix the way that they roll out software and just roll them out all at once like most companies do. But I don't know, but if you guys want to use our referral code, we'd love to have that priority access and be able to report to you guys as soon as possible about the latest updates.
What else you got this month? Unveiling invitation?
An invitation experience to official unveiling. That's the same thing that it was on the last one. There were the only two ones that weren't... That wasn't changed. The only the one and two were changed. Yeah. Moving on to another controversial subject. Well, less controversial was Elon Musk's actual settlement that happened last weekend with the SEC. So we weren't able to talk about it on the podcast last week as well as right after the podcast. But Elon ended up settling his case with ACC, which claimed that Elon misled investors about the old funding secured part of his attempt to take Tesla private. Oh, I don't have the full settlement here. Sorry about that. Just open up the wrong article. So the full settlement report, the agreement that between Elon Musk and the SEC and Tesla, because Tesla is actually also like very much involved in that agreement, includes Elon stepping down from the role of chairman within the next 90 days. It includes also the obligation of Tesla to appoint two new independent directors, something they already did a few months back, or was it last year? No, I think it was this year, earlier this year.
Yeah, it was either late last year or early this year.
Yeah, in the past year, they did have two independent directors. Now they got two others, which, of course, weakens Elon Musk's hold over the board. Or maybe not. Like, independent can be up for debate, really, who's independent, who's not.
Do you think Grimes will be on the board?
Grimes? I think they're not together anymore.
Oh, really?
That's the last rumor.
Oh, wow.
Musk asked all to pay $20 million, which is quite a hefty fine. But not as hefty as that.
I think he can afford it.
I think he can too. But Tesla also have to pay $20 million. I don't know when they have to pay it, but since it happened within Q3, I think they're going to have to account for it within Q3, which is also going to affect their attempt to become profitable during the quarter, I think.
And you'd think, like, all right, so they settled. Elon would just take it easy on Twitter, right? I mean, that's... You would think that, right?
Yeah. But he didn't.
He didn't.
No, and that's what was the story today. Like the stock, Tesla stock went down, and people attributed that to Elon sort of mocking, if you will, mocking the SEC on Twitter with sort of what did he say?
The shorts.
The shorts enrichment commission instead of the security enforcement commission.
Yeah, why do you think he got so upset just now or yesterday? Rather than, like, what? Why did he wait until yesterday to talk about it and theoretically know that he's bringing the stock down?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's weird, too, because when the next day after that happened, and, like, everybody reported, was it after the settlement? No, not after the settlement, but the next day after it was announced that the ECC was suing him, he said, like, keep calm, everyone. Like
right.
he said, the right thing. Like he said, like the mission is still good. Like if you're in for the long term, it's gonna be good.
Right. Those were good ways to say it on Twitter.
Yeah. So it sounded like it was the correct way to approach it. But then, like in the last week, something happened for some reason. I don't know what exactly. But even though, like. If you care about Tesla stock, like in the short term, like the volatility, I can absolutely get why you're upset about that. But myself, as someone who doesn't care about Tesla short, like day to day, I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's a buying opportunity if you believe in the long term.
No, not just that. I mean, like we talked about it in the last podcast. Like we said that the SEC going after Elon over those few tweets was basically working for the shorts
right.
a lot, like in a way. And that's basically what he said with that tweet, with that
right.
Short enrichment commission, and not corrected me with exchange commission, which is correct. What did I say? Security.
So it is the Securities Exchange Commission.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a short enrichment.
Yeah, commission. But I did something else. Yeah. I said something else. That's a few drinks in me. I apologize.
You were well-meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you could be the chairman.
Fred from chairman for chairman in the comments. Oh, boy. No, I'm okay. I don't want that job. That's fine. Thank you.
I don't think chairman does much. I think you just get paid a lot of money.
Do you?
No, you don't get paid a lot of money.
I don't think you get paid a lot. You get paid money just to show up at the meeting and everything. But
I think you get a car.
Do you get a car?
I feel like you do.
I don't think you do. I think everyone at Tesla has to buy the car. Like
I think price. You get first dibs at a car.
Yeah, well... Yeah, if a car is announced, yeah, that was the thing, right? The car, a new car was first conceived at the meeting, like it was green lighted to go to production. So that's when you can apply, you can give the check to be the first in line.
Right.
So that's when Steve Jobson gave the first check to be like, I want the Model S, first Model S.
He knew it was coming.
Yeah, because the rule at Tesla is the first person to give a check for a car that has been announced is able to get the first out of the of line, and normally it's Elon Musk because he's the one green lighting the thing, so he can just like pay right away. But for the Model S, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Steve Jobson. What is happening with Steve Jobson? Because he was on Tesla board, I think he still is officially on Tesla board, but he was suspended or he's not in the board.
Yeah, I think he's just suspended for the moment,
indefinitely.
I don't know.
From some very vague like misconduct thing, like
there was some. The woman at Bloomberg wrote a book.
Brotopia, something like that?
Yeah, Brotopia.
Brotopia, right.
He was having sex parties. And
yeah, but most people completely like denied that it wasn't a sex party. So it was like kind of a weird source that she had. But moving on from Tesla this week. Like I said earlier in the show, I think not everyone understood though because of the problem with the audio at the beginning. We are in Paris. For the Mondial de l'Auto, which is the Paris Motor Show for you English-speaking people. And we came here, like we said, we came here with Kymco for their launch of the electric scooter thing. But so that's why Micah was here, but he's still here. But I took the opportunity also to look around and check for the electric vehicles at the show. Wasn't really impressed by the EVs at this year at the show. There wasn't that many things that were new. One thing that I wanted to look, though, to take a look at while I was there was the Peugeot e-Legend, which I, of course, I talked about was the last show or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was Camaro.
Yeah, it's the muscle car that the all-electric muscle car that Peugeot came up with as a concept vehicle. And now we're trying to push very hard for them to make that car because I think it's a great-looking car. We had an appointment to take a look at it 2 days ago, but the French president, Emmanuel Macron, took away our appointment, shut down the entire booth for Peugeot. We couldn't get in, even though we had an appointment. But Peugeot made it right the next day, and we got a close look at it. And in person, I have to say, it's just as good-looking as we saw in the concept pictures that we published a few weeks ago. Awesome-looking car. The interior, the velvet blue interior, was solid. Like, it was awesome interior. The seats were great. Unfortunately, the concept itself didn't have a steering wheel, so they made the whole concept to be sort of autonomous, part autonomous. But they talked about it in the press release that it was actually a retractable steering wheel, which wasn't there on the concept. I think they should just like forget for now the autonomous driving, which of course is dependent on them delivering that technology, which doesn't exist yet, and just make that car like it is, the nice travel muscle car. We're talking about the 100 kilowatt-hour battery pack and electric motor with 340 kilowatt output, top speed 137 miles per hour, 220 kilometers per hour.
And didn't we hear that there's like a petition going on that people started to Peugeot make it?
Actually, Tesla told us that. It was a petition to make it happen. So I didn't find it though, so we'll look into it. But we did make a poll on electric. And it looks like the vast majority of people, like 83% of people, want to see that car happen. So make it happen, Peugeot. No one would confirm at Peugeot that it's going to happen. But I feel like it might be in the cards.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a rolling piece of art is what it was.
Exactly.
It was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, check out our post about it on electric, a closer look at the Peugeot e-Legend. We took a bunch of close-up shot here. Of the thing, it's just beautiful. There's a whole screen underneath the dash, which doesn't make sense when you think about it. Like, why would you look underneath the dash? You never look there. But the way that the seats are positioned, it looks well positioned, really. Of course, that's more like an autonomous driving thing. But in the short term, they could just give up that feature and focus on just the powertrain itself. Looked great in terms of specs. The designs looks awesome, and it doesn't exist right now. There's not there in the segment, in the muscle car segment, in the coupe segment. There's no all-electric vehicle, and of course, 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. It's not going to be cheap, but I think it could be great. Moving on to the e-bikes, that was surprising to me, like because it's the Paris Motor Show. It's the Mondial de l'Auto, not the Mondial de la Bicyclette. And still, we walk around and there were a ton of e-bikes there. There were a bunch of scooters. There was some electric motorcycles, but not that many, right?
More like electric dirt bikes. There were a few motorcycles, but yeah.
Yeah.
I was really hoping Harley-Davidson would have their electric Livewire, but that was a no-go.
Maybe in Milan next month. We'll see.
Yeah.
But there were a few of them that we were particularly interested in, like the Specialized one. What's up with that?
Specialized. That was interesting because we were just in Reno at Interbike about a month ago, where most of the electric bicycle companies were showing off their new stuff. But Specialized is one of those brands that they don't normally go to like the big shows. They generally do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they were here in Paris, and so they were showing off their new electric mountain bikes. And these were some really, really nice bikes. Specialized, they're kind of like the Apple of bicycles. When they build something, it's top notch. It's quality. You pay a lot for it, but you get what you pay for. And on these new bikes, specifically the Turbo Levo, is where they introduced two main new components. One was the motor, and this is the Brose motor, which is lighter this year. It's about 11% lighter. It's also a little bit more efficient. But the big thing is that they're reducing weight on the bike. And that's important because they actually put a bigger battery this year as well. They increased it by around 40% from 500 watt hours to 700 watt hours. And the other interesting thing is they did that by keeping the same number of cells, but switching from 18650, which are like the older type of cells that Tesla used to use to the 2170 cells, which are the new size cells. They're not Tesla cells. It's just a new form factor, but they're using bigger battery cells.
Mm-hmm. 18650 is still using the Model S and X, though.
Okay.
But the Model 3, yeah, they do use the 2170. It looks the same. It seems to be a lot of advantages, which I assume e-bikes can also leverage.
Yeah, 700 watt hours in that small of a tube battery is quite a bit. The kind of industry standard Bosch batteries are either 400 or 500 watt hours. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, almost, you said 40%. More range you're going to get, or more power. So that's impressive. And as you said, the Brose engine, it's a little bit better than Bosch in terms of noise, and they've lowered the weight and increased the newton meter of torque. So it seems like a really good package, and it looks really nice. I mean, it looks almost like a regular mountain bike.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really nice package. And, like, I mean, the one downside, I guess, if you could say it, would be the price. Like, these are expensive. The entry-level Turbo Levo starts at, I think, $4,900 now, and they go up to, like, $10,000. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I learned is, well, first of all, I used to think that, like, if you're paying that much money for an e-bike, like, you're just paying for, like, the name or something. You're paying for a label. Mm-hmm. But what I discovered when we went to Interbike and we were doing this downhill electric mountain bike riding is that there's a reason that you pay so much for these nice electric mountain bikes. And that's basically for the safety and for the comfort of riding down a mountain and not feeling like you're about to die. We rode a number of bikes. I think, like, the most expensive ones we rode were like $7,500. But at the end of the day, I took a $2,000 e-bike down the hill while Seth was on like a $7,000 e-bike. And I thought I was going to die. It was... there's a difference in the level of components and the level of design on an expensive electric mountain bike and a cheap one. So you're paying a lot for these specialized bikes, but it's worth it when you're doing this kind of type of extreme riding.
And are those bikes available everywhere now? Are they have distributors everywhere, mainly in Europe? Or
I believe you can buy them in the U.S. as well. Okay. But I don't think the 2019 model is available yet.
Okay. Yeah, they brought the latest model at the show this year.
Right.
And that's one thing about bikes is it's kind of annoying that Europe gets, it seems like, the best e-bikes first because e-bikes are so much bigger here. So you have to wait like a half a year before the U.S. gets the same bikes.
Yes. Speaking of another European e-bike company, Ravolt Bikes. I was quite impressed with this one. A new company, fairly new company, but they have already one bike on the market, and now they brought three new bikes at the Paris Motor Show, and we're also impressed by their two new ones, right?
Yeah. I mean, these were just... There's two really cool things about the Ravolt bikes. The first is that they're just really beautiful bikes. It's like, it's a lot of leather and like beautiful, like, you know, like Spanish leather work, not like Harley Davidson leather. And the second thing is the technology. So in addition to like being decked out and like the leather and the brass and looking like all like steampunk, they've got these really nice motors that Ravolt developed. They're not just on most of their models, they're not just like buying a stock motor. Their entry level bike does have a stock motor to get the price down to I think like 1400 euros.
Yeah,
but the higher end bikes, which go up to about 4000 euros, they've designed their own motors. It's got built in controllers. They designed their own computer, which is like the largest screen I've seen on an e-bike computer. It's a color screen, and they developed their own proprietary software for it. So you can either get the screen, or you can save like 200 euros on the bike and just use your phone and download their software in an app. And the bikes themselves are just, they're really impressive looking. And they're designed really well. So they're the type of bikes for someone who basically wants something that stands out. You know, they don't just want to have the same bike as everybody else on the corner. And I think they're really nice looking bikes. The other cool thing that Ravolt added was a solar charging bicycle cover. So like a lot of people have those like thin bicycle covers or motorcycle covers that you put over your bike. They have one that it folds up into this beautiful leather briefcase. And when it unfolds, there are solar panels on it. So you can actually charge your bike while it's covered. I don't think it's going to be like a super fast charge, but you could probably get most of your battery charged if you have like 10 hours of sunlight kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a cool feature to have. And also you can put that briefcase, once fully folded, you can put the briefcase like on a cargo space on the size, right on the side on your back wheel. So you can carry them around.
And also the batteries, you can kind of carry the batteries. There's different designs, but you can, instead of, you know, picking up a heavy just battery, it kind of looks like a briefcase or a purse in the case of that one. So you're not carrying a big battery up to your office. You're carrying a briefcase. You would expect.
Looks like a nice leather briefcase. It's really slick looking. For anyone who like cares what their bike looks like and isn't just buying one like purely to get from point A to B, then these are really nice, really slick designs. It was very impressive. It definitely stood out from all of the other designs we saw, even the inner bike where there were hundreds of bikes.
Yeah, and talking to the company too, like. You talk to a lot of e-bikes e-bikes company, and you gotta use like a lot of them. It looks the same. Their distributors, they buy the bikes and they rebrand them and everything. Talking to these guys, you see that they make their own bikes and they are in love with what they're doing. And you felt into the product itself. Like there's some love in that product. We're impressed by that.
Yeah, like we're talking to the CTO and like he's programming these things. Like he's not just, choosing which parts to buy. Like they are designing these themselves. It's really nice.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bikes just say, we're going to use the Bosch system. We're not going to even think about speedometers or, battery usage or whatever. We're just throwing the Bosch onto our bike. And that's it. I mean, I feel like half the stuff in Interbike was a Bosch on a mountain bike.
Yeah.
So it is refreshing for sure.
Mm-hmm. Another cool thing that we saw at the show was the Rapid 3, which it's kind of, at first it can be tough like to see like a market for it because it's quite an expensive like commercial electric vehicle for what it is, which like a trike basically is. What do you call that?
I would call that like either like if you've ever been to like Thailand or India or somewhere where they have tuk-tuks where it's like a little truck on the back and a motorcycle on the front. So it's like a three-wheeled rickshaw kind of cargo trike, I would call it. But like a bigger cargo trike.
Not it's quite big.
It's a vehicle and not like a bicycle-style tricycle.
Yeah, so like you said, it's something that you see like in third world countries, like in India, developing countries. But of course, like at that price, those people are going to have a hard time like buying it. But as the first iteration of a product like that, like you could see a future path as the price come down, or it's going to electrify a fleet that is currently quite massive and gas powered at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, those are also good for like the the campus type of uses where currently maybe you have a GEM or a natural gas powered vehicle or a whatever that goes inside and outside. This is, good for warehouses, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what are the specs on those? The batteries that you were talking about, the battery is pretty impressive on that thing, right?
Yeah, that's probably the coolest part of this, is that they're using a fairly new type of lithium battery. It's a subclass of lithium ion, but it's lithium titanate. Mm-hmm. And the major draw is that it's super long lasting. So these are rated for 20,000 cycles, which... Lithium ion, it depends on the chemistry, but a lot of them, it's tough to get to 1,000 cycles. And I was thinking about the math a little bit, like 20,000 cycles, even for a commercial vehicle, like it would take a lot to get there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like, you could do a decade and not reach 20,000 cycles if you're not charging, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 times a day.
And the drawback, though, is the price, right?
Yeah, so that's the main downside of lithium titanate. It's incredibly expensive. And so this company is actually planning to do a leasing process where they actually own the battery and companies buy the vehicle. And that way, the company doesn't have to worry about the upfront cost of the battery or worrying about degradation or anything, though that would be slow over time. I imagine some of the price of the expensive battery does trickle down to the vehicle because the company still has to, cover their production costs, but it certainly keeps the price lower by not paying for that gigantic 5 kilowatt hour in like a tricycle lithium titanate battery.
Yeah. So, I mean, it starts at 11,000 euros, but like Micah said, without batteries. And they didn't disclose the price of that leasing program yet, I think.
No, they didn't. So
depending on that, we're going to see like the actual market for it. But it's interesting enough on the fact that it's a whole new segment that they're trying to electrify, which we already know is popular as a gas-powered segment. And as we know with other segments that have been electrified, cost comes down over time and electric adoption increase. So something to keep an eye on, I think. The tuk-tuk electrification, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, that would be big. Like, if you've ever been to some of those developing countries, like, mm-hmm. you see those, like, tuk-tuks and rickshaws mm-hmm. everywhere. Like, that's the normal way to get around. And they're loud, they're smelly. Like, it's an interesting experience, but it's not a good experience, I would say. And if that could be replaced by electric vehicles, then that would have a huge impact on those countries.
Yeah. And speaking on impact on the electrification in the developing countries, not just developing countries, but countries who, for some reason, have adopted scooters, which we haven't done in North America, really, not in a very meaningful way yet. We were here, like I said earlier, with Kymco. We were invited by Kymco, who happens to be the largest manufacturer of scooter in Taiwan. Not just electric scooter, just all scooters. But now they're going electric in a big way, which is exciting. And they launch a new, a commercial version of their Ionix brand, which is their electric brand of scooter.
I think it's important also to make note, these aren't like the kick scooters. Like, we're not talking about like Bird and Lime scooters. These are like moped style, like, sit on multi-passenger scooters.
Is there a way to delineate that? Like,
in English, it's the same word. It's super frustrating.
Right.
I never know how to.
Like, so kick scooter and.
I sometimes call them sit-on scooters, it doesn't feel right.
Like, in French, we have trottinette, which is very useful. We have scooter and trottinette.
Yeah,
those scooters, it's not really French, but we use it.
Yeah, in Hebrew, there's two different words, and I keep wanting to use a different word, but it's in English, it's the same word.
Maybe electric has enough impact that we can invent our own word and like keep pushing it until
people... put that on the agenda.
Yeah, we'll use it. If you have any suggestions, guys, for... different word for electric scooter that are kick on scooter, that'd be great.
Maybe they'll just be called Birds.
Bird would love that, wouldn't it?
I'm sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so tell us a little bit about Ionix commercial and also the whole battery infrastructure that they're building around it. Because I think that's the most interesting part, right?
Yeah, definitely. So there's sort of a few components to this. First, there are the Ionix scooters. So Kymco's electric scooter sort of suite is known as Ionix, and they've got a number of different scooters for different sort of purposes. There's the consumer line, but they adapted it into the commercial line, which they're pitching now. And there's the scooter sharing scooter, so they could fit one or two passengers. And it's basically meant like the Coupe program in Berlin and Paris, or in the U.S. there's Scoot in San Francisco, Scooby in Pittsburgh, and Revel in New York, or basically just like the Lime and Bird scooters. You download the app and you find one of these electric scooters sitting around, and you can just ride it around wherever you need to go. And it's a great way for people to get the benefits of riding one of these scooters without the hassle of ownership or having to buy a $2,000 to $3,000 or $4,000 scooter. So that's one part. Then there's the other commercial scooters, which are like the cargo scooters or the delivery scooters, which are designed for companies that have giant warehouses or campuses. Like Apple could have these big scooters on their campuses, and people can ride them around all over the place. So those are sort of like the line of commercial scooters. But the other big part of the Ionix commercial platform are the batteries, and so this is really, I think, the most interesting part. Is that Kymco's created these 650 watt hour batteries that they come in their own case. You can pick them up. We were playing with them tonight, and they're really light. It's you can pick up two or three at a time, and you just put one or two of them in the scooter, and you can even carry extras. So however far you need to go, you just bring enough batteries, and you just swap them out, so you never have to worry about range anxiety. And then in addition, Kymco has developed these charging stations, which are, they kind of look like a vending machine. So there's just a bunch of slots, and you walk up, you stick your battery in the machine, and it charges your battery. They can also be used for swapping. So, you put your depleted battery in, you pull out a new battery, stick it in, and you're ready to go. So whether it's being used in like a ride share, you never have to worry about, finding a scooter with a dead battery, or if it's on like some warehouse or some company's campus, there's just always batteries available. And I think the really cool thing is that this could become a standard for a swappable battery. because right now, you know, there's no standard. It's, you know, like charging cell phones 10 years ago, everyone had a different connector. Right now, everyone's got a different battery. And if Kymco's battery can become a standard, that would really open the door for a lot of interesting designs, because that's something that Kymco is pushing. When we talked to their chairman, they were talking about how they really want to become sort of the gas station model for batteries, that anybody who's basically driving any electric vehicle, especially, you know, personal electric vehicles, can just pull up to one of their battery swap stations, pull out a fresh battery, put it in, and you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. So if a bunch of different electric vehicle companies are designing motorcycles and scooters and even like small electric cars with these batteries, you know, you could just pop these suckers in and go. I think like a small electric car, you could put, you know, 10 or 15 of these batteries in the back, and it would be really easy to sort of decide how much battery capacity you want, right?
And take with you.
Yeah. Like if you're just driving to the store, you put a few batteries in. If you're driving up the coast, you know, put in 15 batteries.
Mm-hmm. Something like a smart car or something like that.
Exactly.
Not a huge car, of course.
Like, yeah, not too big of a car, because these, you know, these batteries are each, you know, like 10 pounds. They're not gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting model.
Yeah, it is for sure. And the other thing that's part of the IONIQ commercial launch is they're making like a turnkey platform where they also own all the software behind it. And basically any kind of company, entrepreneur, or entity of any kind, including governments, especially like municipal governments, if you want to sort of launch that on a smaller scale, you can just go to Kymco, Kymco's IONIQ commercial, and they'll supply everything you need to launch, like you said, bike sharing, scooter sharing, or some delivery service that uses scooters, any kind of company or service that can use those platforms. They have everything you need from Kymco directly, and you can launch that. So I think it's going to make a lot easier for a lot of people to just pull the trigger and launch those services, which are so far limited in many markets. Like,
right. Like, imagine how much work someone like Bird had to do to begin. Like, they had to, you know, find the scooters, make the partnerships, develop the charging infrastructure, create the app. Like, so many different pieces needed different people to solve those problems. And now, like, anybody can just come to Kymco with a check and say, I want to start scooter sharing in, like, L.A., and they will give you a pile of scooters, a pile of batteries, charging stations, and the software, and you just start doing it.
Yeah.
It's super easy for, like, any local government or company or basically any commercial entity to just start a electric scooter program.
Yeah, so we're still looking into, like, what kind of volume they can get quickly, like the manufacturing capacity. We were talking to the chairman earlier. He seems quite willing to see a high mix of electric vehicle within their already huge production capacity for gas-powered scooter, which I think is like 500,000 here.
It's
crazy. Up there. It's very high. But he seems willing to be able to go electric. It's not like he's too worried about losing market share from gas-powered car by going like gas-powered scooter, excuse me, from going electric. So if the manufacturing capacity is there, I could see some like huge orders for things like that with cities and companies all over the world, which at the end of the day is going to do what is our mission too, is like to convert some gas-powered knowledge into electric mileage, which is going to help the whole world. So very excited about that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that it could even filter its way down to bikes. We talked about earlier how you know, half the bikes we saw had Bosch systems. Well, Bosch could say, you know what, we're not making any money from this whole battery thing. We're just going to move over to Kymco batteries, and then everybody who has a bike could just, you know, roll into a gas station and swap out their batteries. And it's a 650 watt hour battery, so it's pretty kind of on par with what's out there today. We talked about the Specialized earlier, which is 700, but that's kind of high end. This would be, you know, fairly inexpensive, you would assume. And if these charging stations are everywhere, it'd be quite nice. Also, he mentioned these are full of 18650 cells, just like Tesla Model S and X, but these are made by LG versus Panasonic. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of impressed by the size of the package. You know, we didn't really want to bring up Gogoro because that's kind of their main competitor.
Yeah.
Gogoro's packages are a little bit heavier. So you certainly, I don't think, would expect to see like a smaller person, woman carrying two Gogoro batteries, whereas these Kymco batteries were kind of easy to carry. And I think we talked to the CEO a little bit about the competition, and his point of view is that Kymco is really kind of far out ahead of Gogoro in the consumer space, where you know, you want to own the battery. You don't want to just have to go somewhere to get a battery. I think Gogoro's model is like, you know, you buy the vehicle and you lease the battery from us. And Kymco's like, look, you just want the whole thing, you get the whole thing. But if you do want to exchange it, we also have that. So I think it's great. I mean, I wish they would come to the U.S. kind of quicker.
Yeah. Well, he said that when we were speaking to the chairman earlier, he said that it will probably take about a year or so because, you know, you have to go through all the regulations, the homologation, everything to make it legal in the U.S. But the U.S. is obviously a large market to tap. And I think the success of the three scooter shares that, interestingly, you know, you've got one on the West Coast, one in sort of the Midwest, and one on the East Coast, shows that across the country, people are embracing these sit-on electric scooters in a way similar to the way people are embracing the birds and the limes. And so there's a large U.S. market, and surely Kymco's going to want to tap into that.
Yeah, we're really excited about this space. Like you said, like we won't see them coming in the U.S., but it's a sort of culture issue too with that. Like we haven't really embraced scooters yet, I think, gas-powered or not. But yeah, we hope to change that a little bit, like try to change your opinion on that going forward.
It's coming. It's coming.
I mean, it's so much fun. Like I feel like everybody who's trying out the stand-on scooters is kind of like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. The electric bikes are making things easier, and yeah, I think people enjoy scooters. Like if you know, if you're going to the beach or something, you would much rather take a scooter than a car.
Yeah, and even those kick scooters are awesome. I mean, yeah. We've been riding them around Paris for the past few days, and it's such a great way to get around.
Yeah, they don't even have enough. Like,
yeah,
Paris is instantly taken to them.
And we have to hunt them down. I mean, it takes longer to find them than to. And to get the one that has full battery, then it takes to travel on it to whatever destination within Paris.
Yeah, and you can get around Paris really quickly because there's a lot of bike lanes and it's not huge. So.
Yeah, you get out on the Seine, the river that goes around Paris, a beautiful place to ride a scooter around. Yeah,
and I think those are a good example of how the culture is changing too. Because where were those like bird and limes a year ago?
No.
A year ago, the thought of an adult riding a kick scooter was laughable.
Yeah.
Right. And now you see people in business suits with like their tie flapping over their shoulder, riding what looks like a children's toy and loving it.
Right.
So I think people are quickly realizing that these light electric vehicles, they're not just fun, but they're useful.
And really so useful.
I think these like sit-on scooters and mopeds are sort of the next step in that, where people want something that's less of a toy and more of a vehicle.
And you cannot underestimate how much they can... Again, like we said earlier, convert gas-powered mileage into electric mileage. Because when we first did, the first 2 days we were here, the first day and a half, like we took Ubers around, gas-powered cars, Uber, like BMW 3 Series and whatnot. Those are not like get great mileage. Then we did the same thing the next day with Limes, and with the whole, of course, Paris has heavy traffic. So we were able to get to our destination as barely as much faster. If you account for hunting the actual scooter, though, maybe a little bit longer. If they were just higher volumes of them out there, like just more around, it would be a lot easier. But yeah, I'm very optimistic about the future of that segment in the electrification world. I think that's about it for us, guys. I guess you guys have some quick question that we can answer. We can get on that. But otherwise, I think we're going to call it a night for the electric podcast. And thanks a lot for listening this week. Thanks a lot to our Patreon supporters. We just launched our first, last week you sent out the first hoodies.
The hoodies. And, yeah. And this week we sent out links to T-shirt. So check Patreon for all that information.
Yeah, check your Patreon messages because the way it's set up, you basically get it for free by buying on a website. And at the end of the day, it adds up to get it for free, but you have to still buy it through our Teespring store. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out, and we're going to clarify the situation and everything and make it right for you guys. other than that, again, same time next week, and next week we should be stateside for it. Have a good one.
I'm from Paris.